Hey guys, here for another edition of The Wrap. And if you're watching this live right now as it's happening, a special Friday edition. And
we have those every now and then.
We promise it's not because we forget or don't want to do it. It's just, it was a little easier to switch it to Friday.
Yeah.
And we were even talking a little bit maybe that we would start airing it on Friday. We don't know. Let us know if that is like really... It doesn't work with your schedule, but I have a feeling nobody's going to say anything at all.
Yeah. You could always go listen to it next Thursday if you want to and get right back on the Thursday track.
As always, it's available on newheightsconnorsville.com, or you can now check us out on Spotify. All right. And do you have the new like landing page actual up
and ready to go? I do. It's newheightsconnorsville.com/ The Wrap. No space.
So if you want to, if you don't want to mess with all the fluff of newheightsconnorsville.com, you just go right to The Wrap page and you can watch all those episodes there. But get right into it for today. And moving right through the book of Mark here, find ourselves today in about end of chapter 4, beginning of chapter 5, and few verses in chapter 6. Yeah. And there are about three stories that we talked about this last Sunday, and those being Jesus calming the storm. Mm. Jesus healing a demon-possessed man in the region or the area called the Gerasenes. And then the last thing we talked about was Jesus, believe it or not, shockingly enough, being rejected in his own hometown. Because, you know, everybody is so well accepted and so well received in their hometown when they go back, right? Yeah, nobody is. That's why Jesus coins a phrase that we still use today. A prophet is honored everywhere except in their hometown. Yeah. Yeah, so your takeaway, we've got those three stories there. What's your takeaway, your big thing from all three of those stories?
I think all three of those stories, first of all, give you a really good glimpse of the fact that no storm is too big and no situation is too dire that God can't. That God can't take over that situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And totally turn it around. Yeah, I think that's the 10,000 foot view that I get from that of just how amazing God is. Yeah. You know, and I love the fact that, you know, during all this, you know, especially when Jesus calms the storm, you know, he's back in the boat sleeping. He had no worry.
Yeah.
Right? Because he knew the Father.
Yeah.
Right? And he knew.
All things were in his control.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, great takeaway there. That no matter what's going on in life, God's got a hold on that. Got it. In fact, I was sharing on Sunday that many people say that chapters 3 and 4 in Mark are all about authority, and that chapters two and three, and then chapters 4 and 5 are all about power.
Hmm. Yeah,
the Greek word there is dunamis, where we get dynamite, power.
Yeah.
And we certainly see that in the stories, that especially the first two, calming the storm, healing the demon-possessed man. But that really, to me, if you ask, hey, that to me is the big scope view there of everything, that Jesus has all power and he has all authority. But I think there's something that runs through all of them, and a phrase that comes up over and over again in those three episodes is this concept of fear.
Mm.
For the disciples there in the boat, storm whips up. It's massive. This isn't any little storm. Yeah. This is a great...
I loved how in your sermon you brought out that, you know, these weren't guys who, you know, every now and then we'd get on a boat. These were guys who were experienced fishermen.
We would say
who had been through storms before.
We would say it this way. They were no scalawags.
Right, right, right.
These were seasoned, experienced fishermen, and they're out of their minds.
Yeah, which means this is a bad storm.
Bad storm. Right? In fact, in the Greek, what's sitting behind that, it says that it is the word is megas. Mm-hmm. It comes from the word megan, meaning... big.
Yeah.
Enormous. Yeah. This isn't your usual just little squall that blows up. Something special about this storm, and they're out of their minds. They're afraid of that. And then it says by the end of that story that they are even more terrified when they see Jesus stand up and with just a few words say, silence, be still. And in one moment, that great mega storm becomes a great mega calm. Then they realize they're in a storm with a great big mega Messiah, Savior, Lord, Master of everything. And they freak out at that. Then you move into the story of the demon-possessed man. This guy's out here in the tombs. Can't nobody can control him. Jesus with merely just to the demons, hush, be quiet, get out of that guy.
Yeah.
They come out. He's back into his right mind. The town, all of that, the demons say, we don't want you to make us go out of the country. There's some pigs over there. Let us go into those pigs. You know the story. They go into pigs. Pigs dash down the cliff, right into the
Which
water.
Which is an odd story anyway, right?
You're like, okay. Yeah, I read so much on that, and people are like, yeah, we got nothing for this. Yeah.
You remember it, though.
Yeah, you do.
It's a very, very memorable story,
right? But the pigs dash down the water to their death. The town, the people who take care of the pigs run back into the town to tell people all about it. They come back out, they see this guy, they see Jesus, and they're like, what is going on here? Our minds cannot comprehend this. And it says that they are terrified. They are afraid.
So terrified that they tell him to get out.
Like, gone.
Be done.
Buster.
Yeah.
And then the third one, we have Jesus in Nazareth, his own hometown. These people knew Jesus. We're not talking about a city of 10,000, 20,000 people. We're talking about a village of at most 500, but probably more than likely 100, 200 people. Probably just one big extended family. And they know Jesus so well. I mean, they're like, well, this is little baby Jesus. We changed his diapers. We wiped his snotty nose.
Yeah.
We heard him. Yeah. And so they're like, we know you so well, you can't possibly be the Messiah. And they just out and out reject him and say, we want nothing to do with you. And it says, so I think there's a strand that runs through these that I think is a really big part of all of our lives, and it's the word fear.
Yeah.
And fear always pushes faith out of the equation. And faith is what's necessary for us to properly relate to God and to Jesus. And so we look at these three stories, we see that there's this thread, this element of fear in all of them. And the first one, what are they afraid of? It's very obvious.
They're afraid of the power.
They're afraid of Jesus' power.
And of the storm.
And of the storm. I say what they're fearing in that moment is they're very really fearing death.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
we are going to die here, all right? That's a familiar one for a lot of people. You know, I talk to people all the time who... good, godly, Bible-believing, hope in Jesus people, and they say, I am scared to die. And there's got to be some point in our life where we flip the switch and we say, yeah, death is... And the reason we fear death is because I think most of the time for people, and the reason that it often doesn't make sense for Christians is I think the fear in death is uncertainty.
Yeah.
And as Christians, we should have no uncertainty.
Yeah.
We know if we have claimed Christ and we are living faithfully for Christ, we're bearing fruit for Christ, we have a home that's being prepared for us.
And like Paul says, you know, to die is gain.
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
To be, you know, either stick around here or I'm taken into glory with my Heavenly Father. Like, there's no, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of a win-win situation for the Christian.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in that first story, they fear, like I said, I think what they're really fearing is just on a natural level, death.
Yeah.
They fear the greatness of Jesus too, because that, I think that was a moment for the first time in their ministry that they're like, oh, wow, he's way more powerful than we thought. I mean, we've seen him heal people and do things like that, but that's a whole on a whole other level.
Yeah.
Not only does he command and have control over the spiritual realm and demons and physical infirmities, he has power over nature now, guys. Like, this is starting to stack up. And I believe that whole time these guys are thinking about this and they're lining things up in their minds and they're like, this could be the Messiah that we've been waiting for. There's just so much that's stacking up here. Then you move into the second story of Jesus healing the demon-possessed man. And what would you say that the fear is in that story?
Well, you have people that, A, fear that man.
Okay.
Because he's outcast.
Yes, absolutely.
But the townspeople were fearful of Jesus as well.
Yes.
Of what he could do.
Yes.
And I like how you brought out that, you know, that hurt them economically as well.
Oh, the massive blow that to was, that economy.
Yeah,
in that
I mean,
area.
2,000 animals.
That's nothing to sneeze at. You know, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think as well too, they're in this in this instance, they are fearing what Jesus is going to demand of them.
Yeah.
How he will change things in their life. I think they know exactly who Jesus is and the power mm-hmm. that he has, and that scares them.
Yeah.
And I think that happens...
We don't mind you, Jesus, but we don't want to be a part of it. Like, we don't want to...
Yeah, you
we don't
do want to
change,
your,
don't you, shake things up.
You do your do your thing, Jesus, but you just do it over there. Go take it back. Funny go take enough, it back over to Capernaum.
Don't we see that kind of thing in churches today? You know, we want Jesus. We claim Jesus. But we don't actually want to step out of the boat, and we don't want to actually do what he asks of us, because that could change some things around the, around our churches. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to have to change the way we do some things.
Yeah. So what you're saying is most often what we want are the good things of Jesus.
Yeah.
And the easy
exactly.
things of Jesus.
But when it comes to push comes to shove, and Jesus is like, okay, now you need to step out and do what I've asked you to do. Like, well,
I call this.
Let me stay here and, yeah. and just worship you, Jesus. And
I call that's, this. We want gummy bear, Jesus.
Yeah, yeah, just yeah. We want all the benefits.
Yeah.
Without the good.
We want the good without the.
We've
gross.
Talked about that before. Like we talked about just this morning. You know how we want the blessings of following after Jesus, but we don't want the suffering that
we
comes
want the
with
tough
that.
Stuff. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I think that really shows up in this story. And it's a little bit difficult as well, too, because you have to understand Jesus is no longer in Galilee, and he's no longer in like a highly Jewish area, and people right. who have heard and seen what he's been doing, this is totally foreign territory. And so I believe Jesus takes that into account in somewhat. I think it probably frustrates him to no end that they basically say, leave Jesus. Because yeah. who in the world wants to be told, get out of here?
Yeah.
Especially Jesus, all right? We know that he has some grace because he comes back to this area later on and they receive him much better.
Yeah.
You know, I just think it was such a shock to their system, yeah. such a surprise yeah. in that moment. And again, I think that they knew that by following this man, our lives are going to change drastically. And this is what I think really comes out of that story is this. They were more comfortable with the evil present in this man because they felt like they had a control on that. Mm-hmm. You get the story, they tried to...
They're much used to it.
They are. They're used yeah. to it. They tried to chain this guy up and to shackle him up, and they felt like at some level, even if they couldn't keep him in those shackles and chains because he kept breaking out, they at least could keep him out there in the graveyard, right? That's where he stayed, and yeah. that's a little... So we...
He was contained.
He was
yeah.
contained.
Yeah.
And I say it this way. We often have a fear over that which we can't control.
Oh, yeah.
It's much easier yeah. for us in life, and this is so practical.
Or that which we have not figured out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is a practical ground level for us because I think that's the way our world operates largely is I only want to deal with the things that I feel like I have control over. And when I lose control, that's the moment that I start flipping out. That's the moment that I start losing my mind.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens in the second story. Then we move on to this third story of Jesus in Nazareth, which again, like I said, is probably to me one of just like the most like, oh.
Yeah.
Like... frustrating and like
you want to reach out and be like, seriously, people, why
like
did
you almost
you,
wonder yeah. after Jesus is crucified and he's resurrected, he ascends back into heaven, the people of Nazareth just go, oh, darn it. Yeah, I don't know.
Face
don't
palm
know.
Moment.
Yeah, face palm yeah. like Homer Simpson dolt moment. Yeah. I really don't know. They just flat out are so, and we talked last week about the concept of parable of soils and the hard-hearted.
Yes. Yeah.
And we said, what does that look like? This is at Mark chapter 6,
yeah.
1 through 6. This is hard-heartedness. Willfully disobedient, willfully blind, and seeing what was very obvious right there in front of them. And I think what happens in this situation, and you've heard of this phrase before, is familiarity breeds contempt.
Yeah.
Hatred. Like I think of it this way, and I think we even talked about this as well. You have a sister. I have a sister and a brother. And just I'm going to use your sister for an example. If all of a sudden your mom and dad just everything about their life revolved around Beth. I mean, like Beth is the, like Levi. Like Beth is the greatest. In fact, they have on like this upcoming Saturday they're going to have Beth Day and a parade for her and everything. Yeah. Like how do you react to that?
Yeah.
Oh my land.
Really?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. This is kind of how it is in Nazareth. I mean, here comes the hometown boy.
who thinks he's big stuff because, yeah.
Because, well, and he doesn't really, honestly. Right, but that. You know, they get their impression. He probably, yeah. But here's the issue. Here comes hometown boy back who has been doing all of these miracles, who has been healing all of these people, who has demonstrated power and authority over everything, spiritual and natural, and yet he's from that family. You mm-hmm. know that family I'm talking
yeah.
about, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is what they say.
Yeah, we forget the stigma that Jesus' birth had on that.
I fully believe that the stigma never fully left Mary and that family while they were here on this earth.
Yeah.
There were still people in Nazareth that could not let that go, that they felt Jesus was born out of wedlock. I mean, imagine the story. Oh, I'm going to have a baby. Who's the dad? Don't know, but I'm pretty sure it has something to do with God. He's going to overshadow me. I'm going to be pregnant.
And they're all looking at her like, oh, that's what they all say.
Yeah, so yeah, not only is she the town you know what, she's a cuckoo lady, yeah. all right? Yeah. So here comes Jesus back, hometown boy, like should be welcomed with hero's honors, and people just can't get over themselves. And that Jesus, like the carpenter Jesus, and in fact, you know how derogatory they're trying to be towards him as they say, the son of Mary. That never happened back in Jesus' day. Mm-hmm. You were always, always, always referred to by and being the son of your dad.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if your dad was alive or dead, it always went back to your dad. And so they're saying in this situation, just what we talked about.
Yeah.
Do they even know who the dad is? Yeah. This is the son of Mary. He's a carpenter. He's just a human. He's just one of us. How arrogant he is to go out of here and think that he is something hot. He's just one of us.
Yeah.
You know that. You know how that feels, don't you guys? When people who are around you get the glory and you're still stuck in Nazareth. Some people can't deal with that. And I think this one is a very tricky fear here in Mark chapter 6. I think what it is, it's the fear of the known or the familiar becoming unfamiliar.
Mm, yeah.
It's almost like the inverse of the story in the Gerasenes. Yeah.
They've already got a control on this. They already know who this person is. Yeah. And to make that leap.
My mind has been set. Yeah. My preconceived notions are already there. I know who you are and you can't convince me.
So the base of it still is just a fear of change.
Really, all throughout it is. Yeah. It is. And I was just talking with somebody about this, and they were talking about how powerful the fear of change is. Mm. Because I think underlying that is this fear of unknown, uncertainty.
Yeah. And again, there's a whole mismatch of
fears laying underneath that. Like I said, not being able to control that situation when you change things.
Yeah.
And so it is. It's a mind shift for them to try to see Jesus in any other way than Jesus, son of Mary, of Nazareth, the carpenter. His brothers and sisters are right here among us.
I mean, if you think
still.
Of it, everybody else, for all they know, he could have come down out of the heavens. And, he's this Messiah that's sent from God to the Nazareth people. He was once a baby.
Yeah.
And honestly, he didn't come in a big, grand way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know that feeling, right? It's like, I know you too well.
Yeah.
I know you so well that I can't see you in any other way. I probably won't use it in my sermon this Sunday. And if I do, oh well, they're going to hear
it. Yeah, everybody hears it more.
There is this thing that's used in optometry. It's called a stereopticon. And it looks like a pair of glasses that you put on, and there is an image, two different images that are layered over one another to create a three-dimensional image. But the whole idea is, and the whole thing I'm going for here in illustrating this is, what you are conditioned to is what you're going to see in that picture.
Hmm.
So it may be two different images, but you're always going to see the one that you're conditioned to. And that's how we often live life. We are so conditioned to certain things. And I think this even applies to Jesus and our faith. We're so conditioned to certain ways of doing things and seeing things and approaching things that we just can't have our minds changed because it's so ingrained in us. Yeah. And that's what happens here in Mark chapter 6. And again, it's a fear of the known becoming unknown or the familiar becoming unfamiliar and not having a control and a grasp on what we thought we had to control and grasp on. And so, that fear thread runs through these three stories. That lack of control runs through all these stories. And again, I think that when we bump up against something in life that we have no explanation for, we have no control over, we just flip.
Yeah.
But in the sense is what you started everything with is saying this. We need to understand in our lives that no matter how out of control we feel,
yeah.
God is always yeah. in control.
Yeah, I think that's interesting that we had that whole thread of fear going through there, because it does. It shows us our finiteness, right? Like it right off the bat with those three stories, you get the authority of Jesus.
Yeah.
Loud and the clear. Control of, like Jesus has this yep. control. He's got this, and we obviously are falling apart and not.
Yeah.
Like, which it just like, it gives that dichotomy there.
Boys and girls, here's a great moral of this story. We're weak.
We are.
And we need to yeah. understand that every single day, our weakness is a megaphone and an amplifier for God's strength.
Yeah. Like, well, and his strength up against our weakness makes it look even weaker.
Oh, yeah. It makes us look sure. even smaller. Yeah. And yeah. so I think that's a great thing to take away from these stories is certainly Jesus' power and his authority and being awed by that and marveled by that, but also understanding that in our fear and our uncertainty and our shakiness, God is steadfast and he is strong. And he is in control. Yeah. I think that's a message that we need to hear now more than ever.
Oh, for sure.
As we flip sure. out over some of the craziest things. I understand why we flip out over it and like, what's going to happen? What's the world yeah. going to be
some
like?
Some of it's and really scary stuff.
It is. Yeah. But we just have to say, you know what? I can't do anything about this. I've got to put it in God's hands. And yeah. that's kind of what these stories are about. And especially the calming of the storm on the sea is... this isn't God. Again, you said it. Jesus, yeah. the back of the boat, sleeping like a little baby. He's
sleeping.
Like, guys,
when they're all like,
why
what are you doing?
Do you have tiny yeah. faith? God's got this.
Yeah.
And so that's the message we want for you today and for you to take to heart and to really cherish is that yeah. God's got this.
No matter what.
No matter what. He's yeah. in control of all things. Guys, as always, thank you so much for joining us here for The Wrap. We'll see you next time.
See you guys.